Okay, we're continuing the Mukta Machmas Gufo. That's the third kind of Mukta. Third kind of Mukta, inherent Mukta, that means something which is neither food nor utensil.
Something like something.
That'd be great. Something which is neither food nor utensil. Okay, now, obviously this is going to depend on the Metzius, depending upon the place where you are. For example, nowadays, in Halacha, the perfect example of Mukta Machmas Gufo was raw fish. Nobody ever eats raw fish. That has taken a change, well, for the better or for the worse. I don't know any other change, but nowadays with people eating sushi, so sushi, raw fish will no longer be Mukta Machmas Gufo. So that's obviously going to change according to the situation. Now, there's a very interesting machlokes between Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Scheinberg. And it goes as follows, the question is as follows. It says that a broken utensil is Mukta Machmas Gufo. Now, the question comes up, why is it Mukta Machmas Gufo? Well, the pashas would be, since Lemaisa, I don't intend to use it, it's broken. If it's broken, I can't use it, and so therefore it's Mukta Machmas Gufo. What would be the situation if the utensil per se was not broken, but the situation was that I would not want to use it? For example, you're familiar with Israeli milk bags. A person has a milk bag that he just finished. Just put out the last 2 drops of milk into his coffee. It's now empty. Now, in theory, a person could buy a big gallon container of milk, rinse out the milk bag well, and empty the gallon container into the milk bag and reuse the milk bag. We all understand that that's ridiculous. It's absurd. Nobody's going to do it. So here we have a utensil which really, objectively speaking, could be used again, but nobody is going to use it again. Is this Mukta Machmas Gufo or not? They ask the question, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He said, certainly it's Mukta Machmas Gufo. Why? Come on. Nobody's going to be using it again. So once it's been emptied out, it no longer has a status. It's no longer a status of a kli. It's mokza. Now, what about along the same idea? What about the wrapping of a sucking candy? A person took the wrapper off a sucking candy. Now, in theory, a person could collect the wrappers of sucking candies. Spend 5 years doing so, and he'll have 1,000 wrappers. He'll contact the company and resell them the wrappers, making $20, okay? Right? You could do that, right? But nobody's right mind is going to do that. That's just a piece of paper which everybody's going to throw away. That too would be Mukta Machmas Gufo. Up until now, it's not so bad. Then it starts getting complicated. What about what he's holding in his hand? Right? Right? A regular bottle, soda bottle, a plastic soda bottle, right? Oh, we have two of them. Wow. And one over there, fat. I'm saying, wow, that's great. That's show and tell. All right? A plastic soda bottle. Now, a person finishes it. There are places where they're reused. It's true. Almost everybody, from time to time in the summer, maybe will take them and fill them up with water. But if a person, let's say, has 10 bottles of soda in his home, one bottle he'll use for it. Two, maybe. A place of a whole yeshiva where they have, I don't know, a few hundred bottles of soda being drunk over a Shabbos. How many are going to be used? Very, very few. Very, very few. Perfectly acceptable to be used as a kli, but you don't intend to use it as a kli. According to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, it's Mukta Machmas Gufo. Yes?
In America, there's 5 cents deposit for it.
Okay, so now even then, a person has to start thinking, because the deposit is not as a kli, but just as really a piece of plastic. It's been recycled, right?
Yeah.
So recycling just means they're just relating to it like just a piece of plastic, right? Not as a cleese per se. It's a piece of plastic that I could use. For example, would it make any difference to that hole in the bottom?
No.
Probably not. What do they care? They're just going to dump it in the machine. The machine's going to reprocess it, right? So, okay. Now, what about, yeah?
Yeah, but if it was all, broken apart, then they wouldn't accept it.
Okay, that's true.
They only accept it,
okay, so maybe a person can say, let's say maybe in America it's different if they're going to be recycled. Well, let's talk about disposable plates and bowls and silverware. Now, what about them? Well, they certainly could still be used in theory, without a doubt. No question at all. person could take a disposable fork and spoon and knife and wash that. Take a disposable plate, rinse it out, and use it again. Nonetheless, the whole worth of a disposable plate and bowl is that you don't have to wash it. You just toss it away. If you wash it over again, then why do you need a disposable? Use a regular one, right? And in most cases, it's, I don't know, here, I think they have regular silverware, you know, but in many yeshivas, they have this, on Shabbos, they use disposable cutlery, disposable plastic plates and plastic bowls. Now, the question is going to be, what about them? So according to Shlomo Zalman Orbach, they also are going to be mukta. Why? It is true that I could use them, but once I use them already, but most people are not going to reuse it. It's just not going to be reused, right? Thank you very much. Right? Most people are just not going to bother to reuse it. Why would they? They don't want to. All right? Certainly, the average person wouldn't take a plate used by somebody else and take it for himself. He'd be uncomfortable doing so. So according to Shlomo Zalman Orbach, the situation becomes exceedingly complicated on Shabbos. What are you supposed to do? Right? Here we have a whole huge, also a table full of disposable stuff. And you want to get rid of it. And what are you supposed to do? Especially, let's say your mom says, oh, the bottle, soda bottle's finished. Please take it off and bring in a new one. Okay, right? So you could, and this is what somebody suggested, do tiltu begufo. Tiltu begufo would mean you'd have to kick it off the table and then kick it into the kitchen, right? Right, and then use your elbows to pick it up and throw in the garbage, right? That could get you committed. It's not the kind of normal behavior that you expect from a human being, right? It's not what people do, right? So that would be a questionable kind of situation. Now, Rav Scheinberg disagrees. Rav Scheinberg says, it is true that if I took a plastic, a cup like this, and I squashed it, and it got a hole in it, so it's not usable anymore, it's muksan achas gufo. But so long as it is shayach to use it, so long as it's a functional utensil, it is not muksa. I do not intend to use it. We don't care what you intend to do. Since it's a perfectly good utensil, just wash it out, or just use it without washing it out, you yourself can use it again. It would therefore not be muksam achmas gufo, and you'd be able, and then you'd be able to carry it on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Want to ask something?
Does that work for candy wrappers too?
Well, candy wrappers probably not. The candy wrappers we don't really call a kli, right? The only thing that possibly we talk about would only be something which would be classified as a kli. Candy wrapper would not normally be classified as a kli. Yes.
While you're taking off the candy wrapper, so you put candy in your mouth, now you have the wrapper. So you have to drop it, or?
No, there's halacha. They're talking about the old-fashioned way, right? The person's eating garinim, eating some sort of nut, and he's removed the nut from the shell. So there's a ran, a chidush ran, not a ran on the back, chidush ran. That's the root for something. A korban is a chidush ran that says that so long as it's in your hand, you can put it wherever you want to, right? So you'd be able to put it down wherever you want to. Yes.
What if it came into your hand,
Be'ezer? That's a machlokes then. Whether you know, there's a Mishnah Berurah there in the beginning of Reish Ches. Sorry. Shin Ches. All right. I've been dealing with Hilchos Brachos in the morning, right? The beginning of Shin Ches, the Mishnah Berurah there brings down that it's a machlokes between the Gur, I believe, and the Magen Avraham. If you picked it up, Be'ezer, if you still be able to move it once it's in your hand. I mean, it's easy. The whole thing is only the Rabbanan, and we probably be no gate to be make a little bit. All right, so now we have that machlokes. Now I'd like to point out, yeah.
So if somebody takes it and leaves it on the table, and you come in and you clean up the room, you need to take it.
Okay, that's it. So going to Rav Scheinberg, or a candy wrapper. Okay, so let me see. Let's see a situation. It's not on. I mean, there's a concept which we'll see shortly. Is graf shel rei? What is graf shel rei? Graf shel rei means something which is disgusting. Let's say you have your nephew is being taught how to use the facilities, right? And he's halfway there and halfway not there. Anyway, he was running around with a diaper, and he lost the diaper, right? The diaper's now in the middle of the living room. Looking carefully, you see the diaper has solid content, okay? Now, you find it a little offensive, despite all your years in Israel, to sit in a room with a diaper in the middle. Come on. So you gotta pick it up and throw it away. Since you find it offensive, you'd be able to get rid of it. Now that's a subjective thing. I've seen, when I used to see seminary girls, I gave the standard case of a dead beetle on the table. The average yeshiva boy, so there's a dead beetle on the table, what do you want me to do about it? What can I do about it? It's dead, it's dead. Oh, what do you mean? If you're on, then you can take it out, right? You're allowed to if it bothers you. So now the question is as follows. It's not uncommon. It's not uncommon. Sometimes in the base medrash, people will use tissues. The average guy who uses tissues isn't going to get up and walk over to the garbage every single time. He puts it down, especially if there's an empty cup. But great, puts it inside the cup, right? Now, a person could claim that it's a grap shel rei. It's disgusting, and therefore you'd be able to get rid of it. The only problem is that most yeshivas that I know, during Seder, it doesn't bother anybody. They can have a number of cups full of dishes or dishes on the table, and the guys are sitting and learning, not oblivious of anything around. Sometimes, before davening, well, you know, a chesed-minded individual will say, come on, it's not for the Torah, it's for the tefillah that we should pray with the place full of all this trash and go and collect it, right? By teaching them in the afternoon, they collect it after mincha. Before mincha, they didn't share it. After it goes on and collects all this junk. So, in theory, there is a concept of drav shel rei. I just am not at all convinced that for the average person, that's the situation. I was having a bit of a dispute with the Rav in the show. I pointed out to the Rav in the show that according to Shlomo Zalman, they have what's called Avu Bnon, if you're familiar with it, the situation where the fathers learn with the kids. Now, in order to motivate them a little bit, they give out drinks, plastic cups with water, with soda during the. And the cups invariably always end up on shtenders, or on tables, or on the benches. Now, afterwards they go around, they just collect them. I was pointed out there's a problem here of mukta. So the Rav Tain is Graf Shalvei. Okay, maybe in a shul. It's a base medrash, it's very hard for me to hear that, because I think in most cases people quite happily sit and learn despite that. Okay, so I'll call upon them. That we have to know. There's machlokas concerning disposable cutlery, disposable plates and bowls, silverware, all that. The machlokas whether it's mukta machmas gufo, if you're not going to use it anymore. Shlomo Zalman Orbach says, I don't care whether it can be used. The question is, will it be used? If it's not going to be used, then it's mukta. And according to Scheinberg, that's not true. I don't care whether you intend to use it or not. If it could be used and it hasn't been damaged, it could be used, it retains the status as a kli, and there's no problem.
If something that would be subjectively viewed as a grosh array, like, let's say I find this offensive and Phil over here doesn't. So since I'm the one who's used it as a grosh array, am I the only one who's allowed to move it, or can you move it for me?
Well, if you told him that you find it offensive, then he'd be able to move it for you. For example, let's say your mother said, the mom says, come on, this is ridiculous. You can't leave the garbage pail in the corner. It's hard. It doesn't bother you, but she says it, then it's going to take it out. I'd like to point out that graf shel rei has to be something which is physically offensive. Physical offensive is quite common by women, that if they know that there's a garbage bag underneath the sink full, they can't handle it, right? Right? It doesn't smell. But the knowledge, just the knowledge is a full garbage bag out under the sink. It just they can't handle it, right? Just, it bothers you. It bothers them as much as a taste without an answer would bother us. Okay, right? It really bothers them. They can't handle it. That is not graf shel rei. Asking something physically offensive, even it looks disgusting or it smells disgusting, something like that. Yeah.
What if most people in the base medrash don't find fouls lying around offensive, but base medrash has a rule that you can't have bottles lying around?
Can't
that make
bottles,
it
yes.
Like general? No,
I don't think so. There's a rule. The rule should be fulfilled, but it's going to be used for a problem on Shabbat. You can go after a line of Shabbat. Just like the base marriage can make a rule, no pens or pencils left over on the tables on Shabbos. Not be a bad rule, right? People can hear that, right? See, that fool, the rule, no cell phones in the base marriage, right? It wouldn't turn the cell phone into a graf shel rei. They just don't want it. It's a vizvay of avodah zarah anyway, right? But it wouldn't be a graf shel rei. It wouldn't be, right? So I don't think just the rule is going to do that. Right? If we don't feel it offensive, it's not offensive. It's a physical thing. It bothers you. Yeah, the end was.
There's like a garbage. If the garbage bag is under the sink and the door is open, at that point, can someone say grab shari and then take it out instead of closing it?
Don't think so. We'll just close the door.
Well, what if the garbage is attached to the door anyway? So, in any case, you're still moving the garbage.
I understand, but this is still doing the tzad. The other one's picking it up and moving it. Right? That would not be permitted. That would probably not be permitted. Okay, now there's another interesting question. That's a question of buttons. Buttons. What's the status of the button? Well, the sugya starts out of a din, which is called daltot akelim, dalsos akelim, the doors of a kli. In other words, let's say if a person has a night table. It's a utensil. I can pick it up and move it around. And the door of the night table fell off. So machlegis rishon, the Gemara says it's okay. And the machlegis rishon, and we pass him like three, that's the way the Mishnah brings down. Even though there is no practical uses for the door, I have nothing to do with the door. But since the door, when Shabbos began, was part of the utensil, and since my intention is to subsequently reattach it to the night table, so it will be once again part of the utensil, so even though it is right now in a detached state, it is not muktzah. It is not muktzah. That's what we paskin. So similarly, the same halacha should be, according to the Mishnah Berurah, that if a button came off, a button when Shabbos began was part of a garment, was part of the shirt, part of the jacket. It came off. I intend to put it back on. Since I intend to put it back on, and it was part of a garment, it was part of a kli, and I intend to make it part of a kli again, so even though temporarily it's not part of a kli, it's not going to be muktzah. Okay. That's what it should be. Now, that's really what comes out according to Mishnah Berurah. It's interesting. It's one of the very few times I've ever seen him do it. Rav Neuven in Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, goes against the Mishnah Berurah. He quotes Mincha Shabbos, who's Machmir. Like those Rishonim will say that it has to have a usage, and we have no usage for buttons. Okay, but let's say Ikar Din, there should be no reason why you can't be making. Now, the question is, though, some poskim have said that was once upon a time. Nowadays, not all buttons are going to be reattached. Meaning, let's say you were walking in the street, walking with your sister, okay? She has a nice coat. What if the buttons of the... Not on Shabbos. What if the buttons of the coat falls off? Rolls underneath the car, right? It's raining outside. So she says, go get the button. She says, why should I get the button? How much can a button cost? She says, what are you talking about? This is a matching button for the coat. The coat costs $600. If I lose that button, I can't wear the coat. She says, why can't you wear the coat? There are another three buttons. And then she just look at you and say, you don't understand anything, right? And that's just the way it's going to be. Well, a $600 potential loss for a button, you get down your hands and knees. You only think the words that a Ben Torah is not supposed to speak. You only think about them. You're not going to say them, right? And you go and you get the button. Okay. All right, but what would it be if it was just a regular white button with a white shirt that fell off and rolled under the car? Who cares about it? I go back home, I go to the button box my mom has and take out a white button and sew it back on. So Shon Zalman Orbach says it might depend upon what kind of button it is. I guess it's different than what a person would think. If it's a fancy button, which means that I'm almost guaranteed to reattach it, it won't be mutzah, because I know it's going to be reattached. If it's a very common button, that the chances are that even if I save it, it may never get reattached. Well, come on, I'll put it down. I don't know if I'll have it afterwards. I'll go get a button from someplace else. Use a different kind of button, right? So that what it might depend on. Now, somebody came to me and said that was the previous generation. Now things have gotten even worse. Why? Nowadays, most mothers have button boxes at home. Why? Modern women nowadays don't have button boxes at home, right?
Yeah,
they do? Okay, well, there are many people who don't have button boxes anymore. This guy was saying that his mother has his big button box, but his wife doesn't even have a small button box. So if a white button falls off, he saves it, because if it gets lost, you're going to have to go looking for a button store. Button stores anymore, I don't know. There must be a place where you can get them, but it's not, easy. So I'll call upon him. It depends on this. If you're sure the button's going to be reattached, it's probably not muktzah. If you're not sure it's going to be reattached, then it's not so pusha. Okay, now, we indicated that, yeah?
What happens if you can either reattach that button, or if you lose it, your mother probably has another button that should be reattached.
So again, that's it. If you're 100% sure it's going to be this one, then it's probably not muktzah. If you're not sure, don't forget, right now, It's something which has no purpose. A button has no purpose. I mean, maybe it's brought down in time. The Gemara used it to cover something. I could use a button for anything other than for its normal purpose. All right. So if you're sure it's going to be reattached, so I say, listen, it's just like the door of the night table. The door of the night table has to be reattached. What else am I going to do? I have to reattach it. Since I have to reattach it, it's not what it was a kli. It's going to be a kli. Everything's good. But if I'm not certain that it's going to be reattached, so...
Yeah, I can use a different button.
If you use a different button, then it would probably be better to just leave it where it is or do 2 minutes out or something like that. Yes?
What's that? Can you put away a board game after you play it? Like if you're...
Well, the board game shouldn't be muktzah. A board game is kli shemal kli hetter.
It's like you're not going to be playing again on
Shabbos. Yeah, but let, all right, so that's the definition. In other words, the issue of the button is a question of muktzah. Here's the question.
You left it there.
I understand. So the question might be a question of achana. You're generally not supposed to prepare on Shabbos for after Shabbos. So if your reason you're putting it to get put a cake, you know, putting it away is because you don't want the room to be messy, that's fine. I'm allowed to clean up the room, right? Even more than that, Shlomo Zalman Orbach has a very fine chiddush, very 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 logical chiddush, and very important chiddush about achana. He claims any act that a person does automatically is never a problem of achana. For example, let's say a person was trained that whenever he finishes drinking a cup of soda, he takes his glass and he washes out the glass. Why? And he puts the soda back in the refrigerator. Now, if you ask him, why did you wash out your glass? I don't know. I always wash out my glass. Let's lump this. Why do you wash out the glass? Well, at some time in the future, probably after Shabbos, the glass is going to have to be used again. And if it's not been washed out, it's going to be sticky and it won't be able to use it. So the washing out is really preparation. Why do you put the soda back in the refrigerator? I don't know. I always put it back after I use it. No! Work it out. Well, if I want it later, another 3 hours from now, I'm going to want a cup of soda. And I don't like warm soda, I like cold soda. And if the soda's not in the refrigerator, then it won't be cold. So I'm putting it back in order for it to be cold. Shlomo Zalman says, that's not a chana. Why? A person does it without thinking. A person locks the door and puts the key in his pocket. Why'd you put the key in the pocket? Always put the key in the pocket. What's the real lumdus? Well, because in 3 hours' time when I come back, I want to be able to open the door. And the best place to keep the key. Oh, so you're doing a chana. That's not a lot. So that. So if someone says anything, that's automatic. So I would assume that in many cases, whenever you walk into a room, automatic, you put stuff away that's supposed to be out. You know, that sounds right. Yeah?
In terms of the button, even if it's going to be reused, why would that make it a reason not to be muktzah?
Okay, so that's the chiddush of Dalsos HaKelim. Since it started Shabbos as part of a kli, and it's clear that it's going to be reattached to the kli, so I say it's the situation right now is a temporary situation. Even though it has no yudis, but I still view it as something which is already or still attached where it was in the beginning, still attached. Okay, now another example of muktzah v'achas gufo is medicines. Medicines generally are not used by the average person, right? So the muktzah v'achas gufo. Now there's some exceptions to the rule. For example, let's say there's a home where the medicine is used. Let's say somebody has some medicine which he has to take daily. Obviously, it's not going to be muktzah. It's been designated. If a person became sick before Shabbos, so that means that the medicine that he got is a medicine which he knows he's going to be using on Shabbos, and therefore would not be muktzah. If a person became sick on Shabbos, so now, if we're learning the chostrufua, but if he's sick enough to be allowed to take the medicine, he's sick enough to be able to move the medicine. But the medicine is still muktzah. What does that mean? I would not be able to put it away afterwards. Right? The guy got sick, got some antibiotics, I bring him the antibiotic, he takes the pill, and I put it down on his night table. Then I said, you know, I don't want it on the night table, I'll put it someplace else. You can't do that. Okay, so if there are little children around, then there's no shot in the world. Little kids around, is it concerned that, especially in Israel, they don't go for the safety caps, right? It's not very common here. These are regular pills, you take it, but you might not be able to put away the medicine chest. You might be able to put up on the top shelf in the same room you are. What's that to take it out of the room, okay? You'd be able to do that to avoid the sakana, but you wouldn't be able to do much more than that, right? To avoid the sakana would be okay. All right? Now, if a person is in a situation, it can happen sometimes. Some families, they know that, I don't know, in the winter, kids are running earaches all winter long, and so the eardrops knew he was going to use it, okay? Or in Israel, it's quite common to have a gemach for medicines. If you're familiar with the idea, in many places, There's not a, I live in Telstone. There's no drugstore in Telstone. The person on Shabbos needs some medicine. He's certainly not going to drive into Yerushalayim unless it's pikuach nefesh. So there are people, and even at night, let's say, he needs some medicine. Sometimes a kid's not well, a person's not well. The doctor prescribes some medicine at night. They get it, they go to Yerushalayim. It's a big hassle. There's always one drugstore open all 24 hours, but it's hard to get to. So there's a person who has a medicine, generally a person has some sort of medical knowledge, and they have the medicines at home. You bring in the doctor's prescription, they give it to you, and you give it back afterwards. You go, when you get it from the drugstore, you give it back, right? So a person like that, the medicines in his home would not be muktzeh, would not be muktzeh. Why? Because it's something that he knows he's going to be using. So that's why it's not going to be muktzeh. That would be okay. Okay, now, yeah?
What if, say you have a medicine that needs to be refrigerated or something like that, and you put it out, but you're not allowed to put it back into the refrigerator?
I don't know. I mean, the only way I could possibly think would be if, let's say, again, if the person got sick before Shabbos, there's no issue b'chalal, but it was muktzeh. If the person got sick on Shabbos, if the concern is that he's going to have to take the medicine again that same day, and you're worried that if it hasn't been refrigerated, it may not be safe at all to give it to him again, then we might come and say that I'm moving the medicine before this, for this chodesh evil sakon, and for the chodesh evil sakon to be able to do that, right? Just for the law, just the loss in money over the fact that the medicine got messed up, that would not be a reason. But the guy needs it. What? Oh, Tilt of a Gufa, you can always do that, right? Teeth. Yes? That once makes no difference. Once the owner or the person who the medicine was shaykh to knows he's going to need it, it was not muktzeh for Shabbos. Anybody can use it. Anybody can use it. Yeah. Well, that works as far as hakhana goes, right? But it's not going to help us with muktzah, right? No, there's a din that hakhana, I don't call it preparation for after Shabbos because it's an automatic act. But moving muktzah is always something else. It wouldn't help.
And also, if it belongs in the fridge and you stand next to the fridge and you take it, you know that.
Oh, well, so long as it's in your hand, even if it was in a different room, you could probably put it back. But, you know, for someone sick, you don't always think at this point. You're concentrated on seeing that the person gets the medicine, and especially with kids, you know, it's not always easy. Yeah?
This is, you mentioned before, with the key in the pocket of the soda in the fridge. You're not planning on having the soda until after Shabbos. You're not planning on having, so that also has no use on Shabbos. The key, you're off to minute, but you're not coming back until after Shabbos. There's no use on Shabbos.
Yes, but the difference is as follows. Something which is a utensil, objective utensil, that's not going to ever become muktzeh, even though I don't intend to use it, right? I have a kovetz mefoshim above a pasim, but I'm loving above a kama. I don't intend to use it at all. It makes a difference. It can't become muktzeh, all right? But now we're dealing with something which objectively is not food. Medicine is not food. It's only for very specific usages, right? So that needs the designation.
Can you say that since it's like the door of the closet that once you, since before Shabbos is mutter for this guy, he's planning on using it, so now once he's done using it.
Well, anything that before Shabbos you knew he was sick, then you can move the muktzeh as much as you want.
So since you're planning on using it for him on Shabbos, so now you should be able to put it back in the fridge after.
That's in the case if before Shabbos he was sick, without any question.
Right.
100%, there's no question. Which is very often the case, but if he came sick on Shabbos, it can be an issue. Yes?
Yeah, if he gets sick on Shabbos,
Sure. If you're sick enough to be allowed to take the medicine, you're sick enough to be taught to move them for someone to go and bring it for you. That would be acceptable.
What is sick enough to take the medicine?
That's what we call chol shem bo sakona. Very briefly, it means a person who is lying in bed, or else, sometimes lying in bed, if you have a toothache, lying in bed is not going to do you any good. You're sick enough, you're sick enough that your body is weak. Normally, we would say that you stay home from work. But we're dealing with yeshiva boys, that's not always a very good indication. I don't know anything about here, but I know in other places, you know, if you're familiar with the concept of the leket kuma cheshek, right? It's a play on words, the guy just doesn't really feel he wants to, you know, a Sunday afternoon, for some reason, he has to be, my shiur don't come. they haven't decided what it is that's exactly the problem, but it's not a problem. Right? So we're talking about the normally responsible individual who has to work would stay home. He wouldn't go to work because you just can't really function. Sometimes you have a married woman or mother of children. She's running 102 fever and she still functions. She has no choice what she's supposed to do. Well, she has no choice. She just has to be there. There is nobody else, right? Okay. Now, there's an interesting, one of the other examples are animals. Animals are muksa machmas gufa. They are not food, obviously, unless they're shechted, and they're not a manufactured thing, and therefore they're muksa. Now, there's a din that even something which muksa machmas gufa, if I designate it for use on Shabbos, it's not muksa. If I take a rock and I say, I'm designating this rock as a doorstop, and I'm using it, then that's fine. If it's designated before Shabbos, it's not muksa. So they asked Moshe Feishi, why if I designate my dog? I designate my dog for play. He will make me happy. I will play with him and become joyful. Right? Is that okay or not? So Moshe Feishi says, there's no such thing. You can't designate animals. The animals are animals, and designation won't help, and it remains muksa no matter what. Now, there's a very interesting question. Are you allowed to pet a dog? What's the question? Well, what about partial movement? When you pet a dog, you move the dog's ears. The rest of the dog doesn't have to move. Sometimes he gets nervous and he moves just when you touch it, but it's okay that the dog is not nervous. And you pet the dog's ears, all right? Are you allowed to do it or not? So it's partial movement of muktzah, Now, we paskin. Partial movement of muktzah is also, says, M'chas v'shalom, a person dies on Shabbos, you can't close his eyes. Even though just moving the dead person is muktzah machmas gufo, even though just closing the eyes, partial movement of muktzah is also. So the chura, one would not be allowed to pet a dog on Shabbos. However, it goes as follows. The Shulchan Aruch brings down an interesting halacha. I'm sure you're familiar in yeshivas, there's always a problem of drying one's hands. Some yeshivas have a regular towel that when they put the mezuzah up on the main door of the yeshiva, they put up the towel. Just like the mezuzah hasn't been checked since then, the towel has not been removed since then. That's one sheet, right? Obviously, it has disadvantages. So Shulchan Aruch gives an alternative. It says that if a person wants to, he's allowed to dry his hands on Shabbos on a horse's tail. That's a din in the Shulchan Aruch, on a horse's tail. The Mishnah Berurah asks the obvious question, how can you dry hands on a horse's tail? Horse is muktzah, and you're moving the tail. So he brings down one achron who says they were talking about a detached tail. The horse's tail is no longer part of the horse. The horse lost its tail. The tail is just there and you're drying it, right? The Mishnah Berurah points out that this is highly misleading. One would not normally assume that the horse's tail is detached. So it says the Mishnah Berurah, we're talking about the tail is attached and the hair of an animal is different. The hair of an animal is not subject to the general rule of partial movement of muktza. You're allowed to move the hair of an animal. That's the answer that the Mishnah Berurah gives. Based upon that, the pashtus won't be allowed to pet a dog. Because partial movement of muktza is not acceptable, but the Mishnah Berurah claims the hair of an animal is different. So Mishnah has reservations about the answer. Just interesting. There's a well-known Sfaradi posek, Chacham Ben Tzion Abba Shaul, and he gives a different answer. He wants to say there's a difference between the partial movement of muktzah when you close the person's eyes to when you dry your hands on the horse's tail. If you remember when we talked about Tiltum and Atzad, we differentiate if you're doing it for your good or for the muktzah's good. So he says, when is partial movement of the muktzah no good? When it's for the good of what? The muktzah. You're closing the dead person's for the mace, you're doing it. But if you're doing it for yourself to dry your hands, then it's permitted. So according to him, it would depend. If you've had a hard day at the office and want to chill out, and the only way to do it is by petting your dog, that'd be fine, right? If your dog is the one who had the hard day and he needs to chill out, and the only way he can chill out is by you petting him, then that would not be acceptable, alright? All right, so the pashtus is that to pet the dog is not a good idea. To move it, you cannot move a dog. You can't pick the dog up. You can't. You can walk a dog. I'm sure anybody's experienced when you walk dogs, you're not supposed to pull the dog. That's not walking a dog. The dog goes, and you both go together. Now, if the dog wants to go east, because whatever chesronis the dog has. If you want to go west, well, normally you would just jerk the dog, right? Looking around to make sure you don't get arrested, right? But now you just have to stand where you are, let the dog pull, 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 and when he sees it's not working, he'll go your way, and that will be okay. Yes?
Would somebody be able to close the eyes of a mace inside Graf Sharei? If it, like, really disgusts you to see, like, a dead person's eyes, like, staring out?
I think the notion we use is probably Kvara Bias instead. Kvara Bias. No, it's the same idea. Yeah, probably. That's fair. You know, Kvara Bias means that people are offended by it. That's the kind. Yes.
And who doesn't take care of, like, this? Let's say he has his farm. So the animals on the farm. What do you have to take care of on Shabbos?
Well, you're allowed to feed animals. Right? And as the Gemara brings out, says the animals, there's a question if it's an issue of Tzar Bali Chayim. You have a partial movement, and they talk about to help an animal walk, a young animal that can't walk, you have to support it. So that's allowed. Generally speaking, taking care of animals, okay. Just moving them is going to be an issue. Moving them is an issue. Yes?
Can I kick them
out? Kick an animal?
No,
kick an animal, tilt up a goofo. That's right. I just to point out that kicking dogs can lead to complications. Depending on the size of the dog, I don't know, here I haven't seen, but base mayor, there are a lot of dogs in the vicinity of the yeshiva, right? We try not to kick them. Cats are not cats, they have dogs. Tell us them as cats. Yes.
What if the dog is about to, like, walk into someone's garden, and you don't have enough time to, like, you know, stop it, like, you can't stand there, because the leash is, like, too long, can you pull it?
No. You can do like this, which is going to indicate it that you want it to come, but you can't physically pull it. That's still
tough. You can move it enough so, like, you can hit a jerk.
Right. Especially if it's a big dog, you're not pulling it, right? You're just hoping he doesn't go one way and you're trying to, they'll get dragged along. But to jerk it a little bit to show him that you're interested in going your way, that would be allowed.
It's not like walking animals.
Walking animals, you're allowed
to.
But you can't drag him along, right? Let's say a small arm, you can be able to. You can't drag because that's still too. That'll work. That's the thing.
Are you allowed to do mukzah to save the animal's life?
You're allowed to do tiltu mukzah to save the animal's life. That's probably your better. Yeah, that's how. But we get it. Tzar Bali Chayim. Tzar Bali Chayim. That's right. You'll be able to do that.
Yes. Can I do other mukzah, like to drive, like, if the dog gets hit by a car, drive it to a hospital?
That's Chilul Shabbos d'oraisa. You can't do that for a goy. What? Drive is, maybe you had a goy drive.
Yeah, goy drove.
Oh, that's something else. No, goy driving is only a drabbanan. You want to do a drabbanan? It's how about a chayim. I can hear that. But a person able to drive himself, that's d'oraisa. Okay, we'll continue.